That's the nicest way I can say it. You got some genetic difficulties that make it difficult. Yeah, look at that. Look at that luscious hair.
Let's put it this way. You guys and your hair can't hurt me any worse than having to sit next to my 58-year-old father who's got a better head of hair than anyone at the company. Yeah. That was almost cruel and unusual in what it provided people.
And welcome to Highly Questionable, where everybody learned that baldness is on the X chromosome. I'm Bomani Jones, Dominique Foxworth, Mike Golic Jr. And yes, I think I may have texted you before and been like, damn, that's got to hurt.
Fine.
Not wrong either.
Should we give the Nets credit, or did the Clippers just get hosed by the refs?
Oh, yeah, we're back to talk about the most interesting NBA team in the last 10 years. Now, the Nets were up big on the Clippers for most of this game. Got into the fourth quarter with a double-digit lead. The Clippers brought it back. DeAndre Jordan got this wild left-handed tip-in to give the Nets the lead toward the end. Now, here's Kawhi Leonard taking the ball to the basket with James Harden guarding him. Leonard drives, goes inside. And whoa! No! We're going back the other way. Now, I need you to look at this right fast. Harden reached in. Leonard...
Nope.
Come on, man.
Nope,
come on, man. See, here is the reason. And I don't think that the Clippers got hosed by the refs as much as the refs got fooled by James Harden. But James Harden has run the ultimate okey-doke. We all think of him as a flopper, but on offense. Like, he's not the guy that you see flop on defense and you feel like you got to recalibrate what you've seen to make sure it happened. That was such an obvious flop, and he sold it because we think about him flopping on the other end.
I mean, I feel like it was an obvious flop from our perspective, but the guy who called it, you could see him, the ref, in that picture, and I can imagine how you get fooled in that situation. I don't care so much about that play because it's the NBA, it's the regular season, it happens all the time, but I do care about what we all care about in the NBA is what's going to happen in the playoffs with this Nets team. Like, we have never seen a team that is this talented offensively and also this inept on defense go deep into the playoffs and win a championship. And for the first time, I'm starting to question things that I've always known to be true because they never, if they don't want to, they never have to take a bad shot. There just aren't enough defenders on the floor to ensure that they have to take a bad shot at any point. So if they never take a bad shot and MVP caliber shooters have the ball in their hands with one, maybe zero people on them towards the end of the game, it's hard to imagine a situation where someone can outscore them. That's all I really care about. And apparently James Harden is like better than Kevin Durant right now. At least that's what the numbers say.
I mean, I feel like a lot of that also has to do with the fact that we have been missing Kevin Durant for a lot of the stretch where Harden has been going off here. And at some point, the 7-foot unicorn comes back and we all kind of come to our senses on that. But I'll say this, Dominique, you bring up the defense portion of it. What we saw when they played the Lakers the other night, albeit a lesser than full strength Lakers, when they went to this small ball lineup, was a bit more competent on the defensive end. And defense, especially in basketball, seems to be a lot more about time under task together, communication and effort, all things that this group cannot give in some instances right now because of the lack of practice time they've had together, and maybe won't because it's the regular season. They know they can go down in that other end and get a bunch of great one-on-one matchups and constantly put offensive numbers like this. But I also find myself impressed with the flopping ability. Like, to be able to have the wherewithal to do that in those situations, to me, takes a level of skill that we probably don't acknowledge enough.
Well, the other thing about James Harden that people don't realize that allows him to get away with this, that dude is a tank. He is like 6'5", 225, 230. Now, Kawhi might be literally the strongest dude in the league. Like, there are people who feel that way about him. But, man, we let James Harden get away with that because he is not anything actually like people tend to think of. And he decided to blow that all the way up this year by deciding to lead the league in assists again, which he had done before, but we don't think about because we just think about him jacking shots all the time. We know everything and nothing about this dude all at one time.
Yeah, the strength and the body control to pull off a well-executed flop is something that is underappreciated. It's not a skill we want to celebrate, but it's not easy to do. But I do think that – go ahead.
No, thanks for saying that last part. I got worried there for a second. Thanks for saying that last part.
There are plenty of things that I don't think are things worth celebrating but are difficult to do, and flopping is one of them. Like, that's a difficult thing to pull off, but I'm not going to sit here and cheer for a guy to give an award for being the best flopper. But in the playoffs, we understand that you go up against a particular opponent game after game, and things change. So I think basketball has become even more difficult than it was in the past to project how the playoffs are going to turn out based on what happens in the regular season, especially in this season where the season is shorter, they have less rest, and no one is really thinking about much of what happens now because there's no home court advantage. So as much as we want to dig into these numbers and project how we think things are going to turn out, like, I really feel like we don't know who any of these teams are until they get to the playoffs and figure it out.
Look, most important thing in the NBA playoffs, how many guys you got that can get their own shot, right? The 73-9 Warriors didn't have enough dudes that could get their own shots.
Well,
the Nets
now
have three guys who can get their own shots on the highest level. And in the playoffs, they're going to be playing against teams that have five guys that can get their own shots because they're all being guarded by Brooklyn Nets.
Has the Naomi Osaka era officially begun?
All right, Naomi Osaka won the Australian Open. Felt like she won the Australian Open in the semifinals by beating Serena Williams, kind of like that Miracle on Ice situation, but they played another match too. Anyway, this is her fourth major that she has won, and she looked dominant while doing it at the Australian Open. But I feel like the era had begun already. I guess maybe we're just going to talk about it now. You could have made the argument that it begun at the U.S. Open when she got that win over Serena Williams. But I feel like we've been in this for a while, right? Or maybe that's just a function of who I am aware of. But if it is her era, I can't wait. I am not sure the last time there was a women's tennis player that I felt like looked at it and saw, I was like, wow. She seems really, really cool. Like, on top of being dominant, like, every interview I see with her, the way that she's exposed herself into things on social justice and everything else, like, in terms of learning, yo, man, I am with this. Like, if this is what the future of women's tennis is going to look like, we're going to have a hell of a future to carry on from Serena Williams. Good for her.
Yeah, Osaka Williams does feel like the Cowboys and the 49ers in the 90s. Like, whoever wins that NFC Championship game is obviously then going to go on to win the Super Bowl. So you're right. That's when, if you're going to say it's a Naomi Osaka era, it happened when she beat her in that finals. But I don't know. I saw Justin Tinsley say this on Around the Horn last week, and I was like, yeah, I love Naomi Osaka for all the reasons that you just said. So I retweeted it. I was like, this is great. I love it. And then I started looking at what she's actually accomplished. And she's won a major in the last 4 years, which is hella impressive. But when I look back at all the other eras, when you get an era named after you, like, Serena was winning 2 and 3 a year. Steffi Graf was winning 2 or 3 a year. Like, it feels hard for me to be like, all right, now it's the Naomi Osaka era. I feel like we are on the verge of it, and we are certainly about to step into it, but we aren't there yet. But I, like you, Bomani, can't wait till we actually get there, because she is one of the most interesting and thoughtful and smart, even though she messed up that girl's name, if you're going to believe that was on purpose or not, we'll see, and smart and talented young women that we've had in sports in a long time. So I'm looking forward to it when it actually starts.
And that's what I'm curious about, is who gets to decide when it actually starts. Is it, like Bomani said, the people that are aware of this, or is it the general public and the way that we talk about it? Because I wonder if this is going to be a situation where women's tennis runs into what golf is dealing with Tiger Woods, which is, as long as the legend of the previous era is still chasing something that we talk ourselves into being believable, are we going to keep running with that as the dominant headline every time we get to a tournament? Because going into this, it was about Serena's pursuit of this all-time record. And I have a feeling if she manages to get to the semis of some tournament coming up, it's going to be similar in ways that Tiger Woods always has with golf, where we've got Spieth and McIlroy and all these great young golfers that we refuse to cede this ground to because we've still got that Tiger dopamine hit that pops up every once in a while and reminds us of the thing that we've had. And so that's the biggest thing I have a concern. Not will she accomplishment-wise merit that, but will the discourse around the sport allow for two stars of this magnitude, even if one's not doing the things we're used to seeing in Serena Williams?
Well, dude, that is such a great point, because there was a time when we covered tennis that we had room to talk about multiple people. We had time to talk about multiple people from multiple countries. Like, when you think about 20, 25 years ago, how many tennis players were household names? It's not really the case anymore. And really, for the last 3 or 4 years, all I found in the mainstream public discourse about women's tennis, it is entirely about whether Serena Williams is going to win that major championship to get the tie with Margaret Court. Now, part of that, of course, is because Serena Williams has been so good, and Serena Williams is American, and she's good enough to where she's still competing for these things. Like, it's not talking about that about Jack Nicklaus in 1987 or anything. She's still in the thick. But she's not the best player in the world right now. And to me, not the most exciting player in the world, but she is the story that we have been riding for so long that we have no idea how to get off board.
Up next on HQ.
You start feeling yourself a little bit and you think you grown, and you say something to a grown up, that acts like you are grown, and then they come let you know how grown folks handle those things, and it's quite the humbling experience.
Do you question if this kid was out of line?
All right, so this is the video of Cam Newton at the 7-on-7 football camp. My colleague Clint Yates said that he blames what he calls the olds for coming down too hard on this kid. Jesus. Like, Clint Yates ain't my age. Anyway, let's run this. Yes, I think you're
free agent. You're a free agent, Rich. You're a free agent. You're about to be pulled.
I'm rich. Where is your dad?
Where's your dad? You're a free agent.
Where's your dad?
You're a free agent.
Was the kid out of line? I have been amazed that there's any dispute at this. I was amazed that anybody looked at that and thought that Cam Newton was mad. Like, somehow people seem to think that you got to let kids talk to you any sort of way because they're kids and ignore them. Nah. I feel like all of us probably have something in common. You guys tell me if I'm wrong here. You're about 14, 15 years old. You start feeling yourself a little bit and you think you grown. And you say something to a grown-up that acts like you are grown, and then they come let you know how grown folks handle those things, and it's quite the humbling experience. That young man is fortunate that it did not go for him in that way. Now, he has apologized since then. He says he understands how people could take it as being disrespectful. But nah, shout out to Cam. He went and gave that dude a teachable moment. And his dad. I don't know if that kid's dad wasn't there, but it's probably a good thing because he could have took the brunt of this.
He didn't have to put out that note. Until that note came out, I had no idea what this kid's name was. Like I'd imagined, the vast majority of the people that did what we do with videos like this on the internet, we stop, we offer whatever opinion we got there, load it up in the chamber, and then as soon as we're done and it's done, we move on. This kid's going to go live a life where this is not something that follows him like some scarlet letter. It's going to be an internet clip that gets a little bit of viral one, which seems to be the social currency among this particular generation. And that brings me to another question. Our friend Mina Kimes brought this up to me. Is the real offender here whoever videotaped this and posted it with the caption that it went up with? Because I feel like that caption insinuating that Cam was the one that was triggered or mad on this had a way of making us all respond a certain way. And I think there's some truth to that.
Yeah, I mean, I hated seeing it for Cam. And honestly, I hated seeing it for that kid also, because my first instinct was like, man, dumb kid, and then move on. And then it kind of blew up. And I started to have like a little sympathy for the kid, because it's like this whole world coming down on this kid. And then I thought about how all the dumb things I had done, like if they had been camera phones, like I'd have been so embarrassed. But you know what? When I was a kid, there were no camera phones, so I could behave this way. Like for me, this seems to be the lesson that these kids need to learn, is that they are growing up in a different world. A world where you can do something amazing in 1 minute and suddenly become a millionaire because social media set you on fire, or you could become a national pariah because you did something stupid. So I don't understand extending that particular sympathy for them, because this is the world that they live in. This is the world that they grew up in. So that kid is going to learn something from it, and hopefully other kids do too.
Hold up. Would you at that age have told Cam Newton?
Hell no. I would never do anything like that, but I know I've done plenty of stupid things that if the whole nation saw it, I'd be embarrassed and have to put out some lame text that he put out to apologize. I understand that, but still, I felt a little. You don't have any sympathy for him, Bo? Not even a little bit?
Zero. I thought he got off easy.
Do you question if we should focus more on Anthony Edwards' dunk or the fact that his team lost and he only scored 7 points?
I'm sorry, what was that question?
Do you question if we should focus more on Anthony Edwards' dunk or the fact that his team lost and he only scored 7 points?
All right, how about let's go ahead and play the dunk and see if you can think about anything else in the whole damn world after you see this. Look at this. Red roll! Oh! Oh, show it again!
Oh my God.
Here we go. Boom.
Oh.
Poor Watanabe. Damn. And by the way, That was a collective effort of failure. It was a bad rotation. And then if you watch it again, Watanabe hesitated before he decided to be a hero. And clearly, he had not been reading the scouting report to know that that is what this dude does. You asking me about 7 points. This happened on the internet this weekend. And people are like, a dunk is only worth 2 points. I can only assume that you have never dunked a basketball or been dunked on a lot, if that is ever your thought. And I will put on top of that, I added the second part about being dunked on a lot to account for the fact that what I really mean is you must be 5'9". Only somebody 5'9 is trying to minimize the impact of what we just saw, because you will never, ever experience the joy of holding the rim. I'll never experience that, but I could at least aspire to it.
People score 7 points every day. Why do I care about that? Teams lose every day. Why do I care about that? Dunks like that, they happen once a year if we're lucky. I said if we're lucky. If we're lucky. If we are lucky. That was fantastic. We're going to remember that. We're not going to remember all the losers in 7-point games, so I don't know. It feels like it comes from a place of hate. Anybody who wants to focus on anything other than celebrating that single play, and I don't care about rotations or decisions to jump or not. I just care about how it looked, and it looked fantastic.
It was so good, it made the announcer say every syllable of exclamation. It wasn't exclamation. It was exclamation on that because of the ferocity. He added stuff to that word because this dunk was so great. It's one of those things, it reminds me of like watching Game of Thrones. Like, basketball is a complicated game. It's got all these deep analytics we can celebrate. Game of Thrones, great cast, all this great plot stuff. It's about politics and power. And at the end of the day, you know what we talk about? Dragons. And Blackwater Bay and fighting the undead and the Night King. Like, at some point, I am here to be entertained by people that can do things I never dreamed were humanly possible. That is what the basis level, what I come to sports for in this spot. And so I can't fathom trying to put your focus anywhere else other than the alien that decided it was cool to come down here and kick it with us.
Also, the Timberwolves are terrible. If you are a Timberwolves fan, the experience has to be about finding joy in the misery, right? Like, that has to be what you go out and do every day.
Oh, they're selling those videos on the internet now. That video of 2 points is going to be worth way more than the other ones. True. That whatever that website that made Brian Windhorst go on ESPN Daily and talk about digital kitties is going to, NBA Top Shot. They're going to sell that dunk for way more money than some whack layup in this spot.
We have ways to quantify this now. I mean, can we look at this one more time? Oh, like, how tall do you think Anthony Edwards is? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't care. Yeah.
No, it's important. He is 6'4". Like, you would think that dude was like 6'8 after he did that. When Vince Carter was in college, me and my brother thought he was 6'9 because of how high he got up. And shout out to Aaron Baines. Aaron Baines right there with the beard, the most dunked on man in the NBA, who finally got to see what we got to see. Now he fully understands and appreciates why we laugh so hard when he's on the business end of it. Look, when Aaron Baines is not running to go get dunked on, you need to run the other way too.
Tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, Hornets and Jazz.
Utah Jazz looking like they might be the best team in the NBA. And we still not going to talk about y'all. We're not even actually going to talk about the team that you're playing against. We're going to talk about the team that you're playing against last game. Because Draymond Green lost his mind up in here, up in here. Jump ball. Gordon's got it. So the Hornets got a timeout. Draymond thought it was a tie ball. And he could not abide by that. Gordon Hayward doesn't even believe it.
Oh, did they give him a timeout?
Oh, he lost his mind. Yeah, yeah. Them quiet arenas.
You better be careful.
And let you know just how heated somebody is.
And Draymond Green almost got a technical.
Woo! Look at the score. They were up by two.
Oh, no.
Right. And then after they made the free throws.
Chance to win it right here. Rozier,
then
puts up
and up. Dog. Yes. Draymond, it was literally all your fault because that guy played pretty good defense. Dominique, are you intrigued?
No, I'm not intrigued by that, but I'm always intrigued by Draymond Green, anything that he does or anytime he speaks, because while I don't always agree with it, I always appreciate it. I was thinking back about the time when he was going after that guy. Who was the player that he was talking about? Rodney Magruder? He kept calling that man Rodney. That was so disrespectful and so amazing. I would hate to be Rodney, but I love being on the sideline laughing when Draymond Green gets into that and when Draymond Green talks about how the media and how fans react to players as opposed to teams and leagues. Like, all things Draymond Green amuse me, especially because I'm not a Warriors fan.
I'm sorry. I thought the proper pronunciation was Rodney. Like that's like a cousin Rodney. Rodney. Mike, are you intrigued?
I am intrigued mostly for the reasons that Dominique just mentioned here. Unfortunately for Utah, they are this year's Denver Nuggets, where I have to look at them and say the immortal words of Stu Gotts, do it in the postseason before we're really going to take this seriously. But I'd say for Draymond, the interesting part is watching him have to get all this out in the regular season right now, because now he is on a team where we don't know if they are guaranteed postseason access, sitting around here in the 7 or 8 seed range. So watching the Warriors care in these moments about regular season games has to be kind of a weird coming back down to earth moment for them, who for a while used to walk through these things like they weren't nothing.
Is there a team more guaranteed to hate each other by the end of the year than the Warriors? Like, I don't mean it's a guarantee necessarily, but man, it just feels like everybody going through a lot with them. All right, that is our show. Check out Dominique Foxworth at TheUndefeated.com. Check out Mike Golic Jr., Chinayan Golic, 4 to 7 Eastern ESPN Radio.
Y'all got a podcast too, right? Same thing. Download, rate, review.
All that good stuff. Leave a comment.
Don't leave no comment.